So I've got myself up to London and was at the Devonshire yesterday and standing outside five people deep, enjoying a couple of pints of Guinness, and then round the corner to Poland Street, staying in my favourite, which is the Zed Hotel. I've stayed with Zed many, many, many times, and not so much lately, but they still always comment about how many times I've been there, how grateful they are that I have. And not only that, when I turned up yesterday, free room upgrade, free wine with a cheese platter, free barista coffee anytime that I wanted it. And then they also had a special gift for me, which was either a wireless charger or a branded water bottle, like a Chili's bottle type thing. That little part of recognition for the customer, and also the team seems to be so well briefed that they are absolutely reinforcing the brand and all those conversations at every single possible opportunity. So I then hot-footed it down to Brewdog in Waterloo, and I caught with an old friend. I mean, it's been years and years and years that we've been together and known each other, and it's Paul Dickinson, who is the ex-head of food director for Fuller's, and we worked many, many years together trying our best to make Fuller's famous for food, and I really think he and the team did that incredibly well. So we caught up a little while ago down in Brighton. We've had a few phone calls also, and we always threatened to have a chat on the podcast, and that's exactly what we've done today. So with Paul, if anyone knows him, he's just a constant source of productivity, and his phone was going 10 to the dozen, etc. But he managed to switch it off for about 60 minutes, and we had a really great chat covering his career, his inspiration, his leadership style, also working in the World Cup and running the team there to great success, and he wants to do even more with that. And then we talk about all the great things that happened at Fuller's, all the great chefs he's worked with, and a couple of stories from the kitchen, but then looking forward to see what he's going to be doing next. DSP Authentic, and also his new venture.
Supersonic.
Welcome to Supersonic Hospitality Marketing with me, Mark McSee, where we meet the most interesting people in hospitality, marketing, business, and beyond to hear tips, tricks, and tales to help your brand boom. This podcast is sponsored by Vita Mojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV, reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. And now, here's a quick word from our sponsors. Vita Mojo is proud to be the headline sponsor of the Supersonic Marketing Podcast. Vita Mojo transforms chaos into confidence for hospitality operators worldwide, empowering brands to streamline order management and take control of their business. With its flexible end-to-end order management system, Vita Mojo gives you one central place to manage your menu across every channel, brand, and location. But Vita Mojo is much more than an out-of-the-box software solution. The Vita Mojo team are with you every step of the way, providing the partnership you need, the technology you want, and the experience your guests deserve, all in one place. Vita Mojo will help you adapt to whatever the world throws at your hospitality business. For more information, visit vitamojo.com/supersonic.
So it gives me the most yes chef pleasure ever to introduce my next guest, who is Paul Dickinson, ex-food director at Fuller's, but now doing some pretty cool stuff that we're going to talk about on this podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for making the time.
I know you're a cool intro.
You're like the busiest man in Europe, you know, and even when I was setting up, your phone was red hot, like Kim Kardashian's Instagram alerts or something. So it's pretty full on. So we haven't seen each other for a little while, but we've chatted.
Well, I think it's just over a year, isn't it? I come down to see you on the South Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had a chat. It was great. And yeah, and you're looking great.
Okay. Same goes. And I guess, you know, going back, I like to have people on the podcast that I know really well. I hardly ever have someone on that I don't really know. And I guess we first met at Publican Awards?
Yeah, I think it was the early Publican on my journey, early journey at Fuller's. I think the hero of man, Jonathan Swain, says there's someone you must meet. And I remember you coming out of one of the judging rooms in a tartan outfit, and I was like, rock and roll. I was like, I'm in the corporate world, but I want to dress like that. Yeah, that's where we first met. Yeah, it's been love ever since, I think.
And also, it was interesting, you guys, you and Jonathan had a really tight sort of bromance thing going on. And then I think after the judging, because I think, you know, you didn't win that year, unfortunately. But then we had a chat and it was like, look, this is the journey that we're going on. Do you want to help a bit, whatever? And it was great fun. But I think it would be good to talk about that journey a little bit because you were fearless in it.
Oh, yeah.
And... It was great to see because so many people go into a job with good intentions 3 months in, then they sort of join, then they sort of have some fear and they just are looking after themselves in their job. But you were never really like, right?
No, I wasn't. And I think, you know, the opportunity was, I didn't know what I was getting into, you know, family changes. We had things called children. And then this job came up and it was, I didn't know what I was going into. And it's stiff suits in pubs, which wasn't my thing. But I met Jonathan and I was like, I want to work for you. And he was a great man. He never made it easy and a phenomenal business.
Yeah.
But I best 12 years of my life. But yeah, it was a game changer and I don't do failure very well.
Well, I mean, what did you find when you went in though? I mean, what was the state of the food, the menus, the all that? What did you find?
I think prior to that, I worked for Restaurant Associates looking after a lot of banks in Canary Wharf, working with some phenomenal individuals, whether they're creative. You know, Canary Wharf would do a million a day on food, you know, and that's hospitality and the rest of it. So, and we had everything. We had structure and process and all these different things and food safety. And then I went to this thing called Fuller's and everyone drinks Cascale. Never drunk it in my life.
How does that sit with you, like with your origins not being in England?
Yeah, I think, it was a bit weird. It was very weird. And then, you know, I thought, you know, being a chef, we drink Stella, read the sun and go to work and we're wearing shorts. And I remember my first day, or before my first day, I called Jonathan, like, what do I wear to work? What are you comfortable in? I was like, flip-flops, shorts, hoodie, you know? And then we come out with these you know, great chef whites, pristine and clean. But I'll never forget, I think it was my first week. I started on the on Valentine's Day. It's very romantic for Jonathan. And every year I always give him a rose, just to remind him the thing he did. But yeah, it was very tight. And, you know, everyone wore a shirt, a tie. You know, we meet the chairman. It was about prestige. Most of them went to Eton, didn't know what Eton was.
Yeah.
It was near Windsor.
It's a dessert, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit of a mess, yeah. But there's a lot of great people who had a lot to share. I loved it. It's like having many grandfathers. They all had a story to share.
Yeah.
But what got me straight away is there's lots of amazing nuggets of food in that business. Individual pubs, individual people, they've done a lot of work, but there's no alignment on food. And I think my best meeting was with John Keeling, the beer,
yes,
the guru of beer, the most
absolutely
joker of, he's the jackety of beer, I call him. And he told me a very wise story. He goes, the success to anything at Fuller's is take the journey of beer and surf it. And that's where I think, you know, I'm not an academic sort of person. I'm hands-on. I get stuff done. I believe in taking people with me. Not everyone always goes with you because not everyone likes change. But they were the best words I was ever given. And I think what was great is Jonathan echoed those words on that journey. He goes, you know, the beer has many fathers. You know, we set our standards on beer. And believe it or not, I started drinking London Pride. I did get told off by the chairman, Michael Turner, lovely man. Why are you putting ice in your... the London Pride. It was bloody warm, wasn't it? So he looked at me like, you don't do that. And so I had to learn to drink cask ale, which I got it in the end. I had a bit of time with John Keeling, lots of hangovers. But I think when you look back to what that business is, heritage around creativity of beer and the stories that were amazing, you apply food to it. And then you take people on their journey. So the tangible was, well, in this year, this is what we did with beer. So therefore, in that year, we're food, basic sufficient chips. And and the culture was quite hard. There's a lot of people who had done great work and were worried about an unsung, unclipped individual coming in who, I don't think I'm a rude individual, but I ask lots of questions. some people don't like being questioned. So, and the best one was I didn't, we used Outlook in the banks, but we didn't have diaries. It was Monday to Friday. You knew what you did every day and you had an events team that would manage different things. So when they asked me to start using this thing called Outlook, I was just like, whoa. So it was an amazing journey. It really helped me grow. And what I learned there and all the teachings I got from all elements were amazing. And I think, you know, my mantra now is, you know, look back to everything and enjoy every moment and then reminisce a bit of nostalgia and then apply it to the future because, you know, we only live once and loads of other people have done it. So, you know, it was good. And I still, you know, people I talk to, is best 12 years of my life, but I felt it became a bit of a... as Fat Boy Slim would say, eat, rave, repeat.
Yeah.
And I just thought I want to break the mold and go and just try something different.
Yeah.
I'd never had a job longer than 2 years.
Yeah.
It did feel like, I don't know, it felt like a life.
That's weird for you.
Yeah. And I think as you see people move on and they develop, I think I got a little bit jealous of going, I want a bit of that, a bit of change. But the people are remarkable. You know, there's so many people there who helped me, who learned from me. And I think the biggest legacy I've got is, you know, working with a development team in the training, you know, to see so many chefs develop and have confidence, whether it was even the simplicity of not being able to speak English.
Yeah.
All chefs can draw.
Yeah.
So it really sort of, it really enabled me to have a span of skills that no matter what your language, what your ability, you took people on a journey and made them feel pride and proud of what they do. That was a cool thing.
I mean, not to focus on fillers too much, but the last couple of things I was just thinking worth mentioning was really putting your stamp on the menu, for example. So the dessert, you know, the smoked salmon, the black cab, was black cab, was it?
Black cab Christmas pudding.
Yeah,
London put in, smoked salmon.
That was it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, in terms of that, I mean, that felt quite iconic.
Yeah. And that was going to source, you know, my personal goal is having a better relationship with food. And when you go to an expert in fish, Richard Cook at Seven Hawaii, he's a good friend. He's a hero. He's a Gloucester fan for his own issues. But you go to him and you take a load of beer, don't take cider because he just drink it. And then you start learning how the beer ingredients work with fish and came out with this black salmon. And it was amazing because customers would send it back when we were testing it, going, it's off. But then when you got the service staff involved telling a story, customers fell in love with it. We went from doing, you know, a couple of tons a year to pushing closer to 28, 29 tons of salmon. And the story was romantic. And it was that relationship with beer.
Yeah.
And the same with the Black Cab Christmas pudding. It was, you know, a traditional product, but looking to the past and elevating. The brownie was just something that I learned on a journey. And Michael Turner would call it the brown chocolate cookie. Which it's great to hear Simon Emeny go, no, it's a brownie. And it's those moments where I actually felt like I was the boss, just for that moment in time. But no, it was amazing how food brings people together.
Yeah.
And it was romantic. And yeah, there's a lot I miss about it, but there's so much I learned. And it was fantastic, you know, to ride the waves, to see growth, to see customers. You know, I had the odd moment where someone would come up to you, are you Paul who makes Paul's brownie? Like, you know, do I know you? It was a bit weird.
Do you want me to sign something?
But it was great that you could connect with the people and the customers, and that feedback, that loop of data just became with doing the right thing. That enabled other people around creativity. Don't do it on the customers, take it away. And Fuller's invest heavy in their training. And, you know, there's great people, whether it's, you know, all the people who are there now to the people of the past, they've all added some great bits to the industry, which is cool. Yeah. It was an amazing moment in time.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've moved on.
Yeah, it was cool. And then I think, you know, the last thing is just supplier relations, you know, and I think just for anyone listening, just how seriously you took that, like they just felt like part of the whole organization. It was quite excellent.
I used to joke that on a Saturday morning, I was the most busiest man in Fuller's because I spoke to all the suppliers and just said, you text me three things. If there's an issue or delay, if there's product shortages or if there's traffic, you know, going into the New Forest in the summer, we, you know, traffic galore. So we try and get the vans out earlier because I was the one who called the pub or the chef and say, look, you know, you're under pressure here in supply chain. And it went down a long way. And I'm a big Metallica fan because I think they're one of the most remarkable businesses. Massive. I've met most of the band. But from a business point of view, I don't think there's any other band that's publicly shown how they've evolved through a internal focus group.
Yeah.
They got a part of their business called Fifth Member. And that's how I saw our suppliers is, you know, you plan with your suppliers, you work with them, you have quality checks, you spot check them, and but make them feel part of the team. We had no reps in the business, but we used to say, go and eat in our pubs and tell us how it works.
Yes.
And that was the cool bit is, you know, people would say to me, oh, I can do benefit to your business. Well, name 10 pubs you've been to and what we're good at and where should we focus on opportunity? And people look at me silly, but then people started doing that. And then they'd come back, oh, I could add value here. And that's where you feel that team effect.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I play rugby, or when I did, I'm getting, my body's a bit broken now, but you run into a ruck hoping that someone was going to come behind you and help you. And that's supply chain. And you share love if they give love.
Yeah.
It's good.
No, it was a masterclass. So Brief was make Fuller's famous for food.
It was.
Tick.
Tick, yeah, yeah.
So what's next? What's been after that then? What's happened?
Well, I think I spent a lot of time during COVID talking to people. I grew up in the Middle East. The man who taught me, I don't know how he did it based on me and education not working quite well. So I connected with him. So I went to America and did a dinner. Flew over for a few days, cooked a very, very important dinner, which was for cancer raising money. And while I was there, I sort of met a few people and started realizing, you know, where I could add value. And people, you know, Americans are great. You know, if you can, they're amazing. And from that, on the back of that, and that was sort of my last 4 months at Fuller's, I started realizing that if I connect with a few people, I can add value. And, you know, as I say, I want to make a better relationship with food. I want my children to see the experiences around food I've had. And it's amazing how they get older, the more involved they get. So I started just talking to those who've always asked for help, say, well, what would I do? So, you know, I work with the vegan bakery. I'm on the board. I'll do a few non-exec roles, do a bit on coffee. I love coffee.
It was the most Apple-esque packaging I've ever seen for coffee.
It's mad, isn't it? And when I talked to Ash, so I just started spreading the wings and tried to understand and go back to where it all started, you know, and try and reconnect with things to understand how you add value. And that's where it's been great. And like you say, the phone doesn't stop and people are like, can you help? What does it look like? And how this? And, you know, I could go into a room for a couple of days or go somewhere else. And, you know, I'm better at listening now than when I would say started at Fuller's. But it's amazing how many people help them make that decision because they know what they want, but they don't know how to get there. And it's just been great being helped to add value, insight, and use my experiences because, you know, behind every job, you have a lot of hard times. And I think it's if you can turn that hard time into a story of how you did something, it'll help a colleague or a business relation to actually make that final decision because they've weighed out the odds. And that's where it's been great. And, you know, spend more time for me because in Fuller's, it was full on. I think I became obsessed to the point with everything. And it was just nice just to sit there one day and go, what am I going to do? And even I was like, oh, you're my wife. You know, it's well been. But it's been great. You know, so I think it's just trying to sit back a bit and reconnect for the next, well, maybe the last chapter of my life of 20 years. Yes. But to add value in what has become post-COVID an evolving industry that's struggling, but there's so many amazing people. So, I what you've done with Hospitality Rising, hat off to you. But it's about getting people to realize the bigger picture. And, you know, the future of this industry is based on how we inspire people along. You know, I'm going to my son's school in a couple of weeks to do a brownie demo.
Nice.
You know, the class has gone up to 60 all of a sudden.
Yeah. Because there's chocolate.
But yeah, I told him, I said, I'm going to do an allergen-free brownie. And they're just like, hey, you can do that. I said, Deb, watch this space. And now, if I can start there, and then in 5 years' time, some of those children come into the industry, then tick.
Well, I think it's a huge point, and I think that I kind of feel it's our industry now. And I mean, me and you and everyone that's sort of our age.
Yeah.
I think the older generation are, you know, falling away or stopping or, you know, but I kind of think us in our 40s, it feels like it's our responsibility now, right? And I think that anything we can do to create legacy, to, as you say, inspire people to come in, but it is so difficult. I mean, obviously chefs is always a problem.
Yeah.
But have you got any thoughts or tips on how to get more chefs in or treat them better or what's the challenges for chefs? What are you hearing and seeing?
I think if we park chefs for a moment, I think the hard thing is to be creative. You don't need to actually do anything anymore. You can pick up your phone, you can pick up a device. And I think that for me is the struggle is, you know, you pick up your phone, you can make money on TikTok or whatever. I'm still, my kids are teaching me TikTok. Quite get it. So I think it all starts, and as a young generation, is inspiring food. You've got to put food on the table. food's a big thing. You know, I go on Instagram, food's everywhere. And it's how you connect with those people and show them things. And, you know, Mark, we take our children out a couple of times a month and you get them submersed in it. And I think the key thing is, you know, make food accessible. And it starts there. You know? And it's interesting when you see, you know, I of all the food trends, I think veganism's great. But it's a lot of work to do a really good vegan dish. So I think, you know, if you get kids cooking at home and, you know, it just engages them with it. It's either for them or it's not. Yeah. If you do that, it's work ethic. And then put those two together, you get passion. Yeah. So, and even I got three kids, my youngest son, Brax, he FaceTimed the other day, how do I make carbonara? And I'm sitting there going, I'll feed your roommate. Said, I love my kitchen. It's like watching Uncle Roger. He's been everywhere. His great grandmother's helping him. We were out on our way back home and he loved it. He came home and he goes, that's a bowl of food that I made. And I'll give him a 9 out of 10. It's just not seasoning. But it's moments like that. What I didn't know is all over his TikTok. I get 900 reviews. And that's where I think if you can take expression and then apply it to social, create a following. And I think it's how we take what we do and apply it to social media. Sometimes I'm good at it. Sometimes I'm rubbish at it. Yeah. But, you know, when people come around the house, I do joke with some friends, oh, that was really nice. I go, yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. I think our camera's just died.
but it's just trying to, every touch point when food's involved is just trying to inspire and taste. And then you build it over years because of social media, people want to go out more, experience it. But I think it's when it comes to being a chef, I think the world's changed. You know, at Fuller's, it was amazing. We invested heavily into chef, into kitchen, into environment, into attire, to branding, to give them their own feeling. Create loads of things. And I think, you know, we're in our bubble there, but, you know, I look to all sorts of different people. I saw Justin Carter yesterday in the lounges. They got branded jackets on. There's pride. Let people be proud of what they do. And I think the world, when I was young, working in those big kitchens in London, it was very military precision. Yeah. Whereas now it's inclusion, you know, inclusive, sorry, and letting people have a conversation or this is what I like, or this is where I'm from and this is how we do it. Yeah. And I just think people want to work to enjoy it. And go home and have more enjoyment. So I think the hospitality world is waking up to looking after people. And I think it's as simple as that. And this a business I work with who looks after a stadium, before the staff comes in on a game day, they feed everyone. I did it earlier last month and I was walking with one of my colleagues and everyone's getting fed before they worked. So if you want people to work well, feed well. And you can see all the different nationalities and there's lots of different offers, whether it's sausage and mash or a burger or a vegan option, but people are eating. And then they got their uniform and the next thing you know is a football stadium full of people are working.
Yeah.
So, you know, the small things of, you know, feed me and I'll work harder, you know, all those benefits tick. I think, you know, look after people, whether you're in front of house or back of house,
yeah.
And they'll look after you. And I think it was the old mantra of, was it Dr. Martin's, look after your boots and they look after you when we were young. So I think, you know, more people who I see in the industry now come up to me and, you know, what's been your journey and you tell some stories, they look at you like you're mad, you know, 109 hours, you know, maybe not 109 hours, 100 hour weeks, no days off, you know, £40 a week is what I earn when I first come to London, you know, and they're like, why? And I was just like, I loved it every minute.
Just pulling that thread then, because I know you've worked with some of the best chefs in the world. So going back, ones I remember, Marco.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So what's the fact? I saw an ad from him the other day, and I think it might have been on Instagram or TikTok. And at the end, his call to action at the end of the ad was, he was flogging some stuff he's got, but fine, it looked really nice, you know, nicely packaged and this and that. But it was sort of part of a hotel thing. Okay. But the call to action at the end of the ad was, phone this hotel. what? You know, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it looked beautifully branded. Yeah. But yeah, well, so what was it like being?
I think it was. I'm not good with big words, but it was reality. It was, you know, I remember coming home one year, and I think it was when Marco got 3 stars, and my aunt gave me this book called Food from Land and Sea. It was Marco's book that replicated the restaurant Marco Pierre White, 3 stars. And I was like, I want to be a part of that. It was simple. It was pictures, reading and dyslexic and all the other things. But I wanted to be a part of that. So while I was at college, my first summer, I went to London.
Yeah.
Knocked on the door. Can I do a couple of days? And it started there, really. And you go in those kitchens, and it was like I was this very small person walking in, confidence in people, accuracy in cooking. And then after a few sessions, they were long days. That's where I really learned what pain in your legs was, you know, the long shifts. And but I couldn't get it. I couldn't get enough of the aromas, different products coming in, whole fit. And you just sit there transfixed. And then Marco came in and all of a sudden the team just stepped up a level, you know, because they'd been preparing, lunch service would start. And it was memorization, just how we would conduct a service. It was remarkable. And yeah, I only did it for a couple of days then. And then after I went back for some time and did a couple of the restaurants and it was amazing. But what I loved was standards. He would talk about respect the ingredients. You know, I work with a lot of the sous chefs. I was just a young kid, but people talking about standards and respect product, understand where it comes from. And suppliers would come in and you'd learn all these stories and it's just information. I was a sponge. Yeah. Just take it. Learn everything you can. And I think that's where education is now. You look on a phone, you take it all in, but you're going to take the right stuff in. And in those days, because, you know, there's no TV, you relied on the sun. You know, people would talk about football. I don't give. And stuff like that. So you then became reliant on each other. So that's where I started learning about the importance of team in the kitchen and working with people. But it was remarkable. Some of the produce I've saw was amazing. I've seen a lot because I grew up abroad and we traveled a lot. But what amazed me was the consistent accuracy of knife skills. That skill and, you know, watching people season, they'd go up to Marco, can you try this? Can you try this? He'd sign every sauce off. And it just, that was the military position. You know, it's repeat, standard repeat. And there was moments where people got things wrong. And
yeah, sure.
It was interesting. But it's like, I was a sponge. You know, it came to the point where you take time off and you sit down on a park bench on a sunny day and you're like, what am I doing here? I want to get back in the kitchen, or a day off, and you start writing things down. And I think, you know, later in life during lockdown, we thought he was dyslexic. It turns out he's dyspraxic. So they get a select questionnaire. So as we're ticking it, I'm sitting there with my wife going, man, I think I've got all this. Yes. So I think what working in the kitchen gave me was structure and process. So instead of my head working two different ways, which I think it still did as I got older, and only through knowing that I've learned how to manage it. But that kitchen gave me process, gave me self-belief, gave me a lot of confidence. You know, as soon as you know, it's the steps of unconscious competence and all the way through. But as soon as you do something, you get that great work.
Yeah.
Great work is like, you know, winning tenner on the lottery ticket. And it was those moments where that, as people would come in, you talk to people and you ask questions. But what I wasn't good at is asking the right question at the right time. Don't ask questions during service. You know, just quiet during service. So I did get in, I wouldn't say trouble. I got told off a bit. Speak when you're spoken to. That's where I struggled a little bit.
Any sort of legendary stories from the kitchen, anything that was interesting? Was there something about shoes or something that you told me?
Yeah, I remember. I don't know if I want to let these out. But there's moments where, you know, you say, I'm going to leave. And it was like, you leave when I tell you to leave. People nail your shoes to the floor for fun, you know? But even to the point where one of the guys went on holiday and we filled his locker full of gelatin. So when he came back, and we did it the day before he came back, so we opened up his locker and everything was set in gel. But it's stuff like that. But it's like when you got caught and you've used a box of gelatin, you get this bill. What's that for? You want to prat about it, you're going to pay? So we tried doing things and just using a roll of cling film and cling filming people to their locker and stuff like that. But it became I think there's quite a few females in the kitchen, not as many as there is now, but it became like a brotherhood. You know, and when someone didn't turn up or you got let down, that's when it became really emotional. Hard. So even when it came to time to move on, you know, you'd question yourself. But I think, you know, I moved around. I did quite a lot of the restaurants. And, you know, I think the most romantic one I did was the Mirabelle. It was, you know, just to see the volume, the service, the standards that people put into it. And, you know, I couldn't afford to eat in these places, you know, whereas as you get older and you get wiser, you think with money, you know, I would have done anything to go and eat there. And, you know, my dad flew over, he's on business, and he took me there for lunch. And I was sitting there going, just lobster and chips, never had.
Yeah.
But what was good in all the restaurants is pre-lunch or dinner, you'd sit down and not so much eat at a table, but you get star food.
Yeah.
And that's where you can sit there and appreciate everyone. And I think that's where the brotherhood or team, however you want to put it, come together, started making me realize the importance of how everyone plays a part. You don't need to be good. You know, I was absolutely shocking at pastry. But that was my target. I want to be better. So, you know, you go and do on your days off, you go and work somewhere else and learn. And I think it was, you know, you just sit there and now it's no different to anyone else. People go, you're a natural chef. Well, no, the amount of work and research I did. You know, I was knocking on any door I could, whether it was a Gavroche, can I do a service here? Whether it was Philip Howard at the Square. You know, I'll even do just lunch, because what you want to do is that product be done in very, very many different ways, where I think as standards got higher, whether it's 2-star or 3-star, there's less evolution. So you'd see a dish through for 2 or 3 months. You'd have maybe some lunch changes off certain things. And I think, you know, that's where I was like, I want to learn more. You know, and I've seen a really, really cool thing on Instagram with Gordon Ramsay. And he's like, what would you tell a chef? Sponge. And you know, whether it's you know, cooking or whatever you love doing, everything about it. And, you know, and then even to that point, once you've learned all the basics and how you evolve and innovate. And that's where I say to people about creativity. Creativity is a process.
Yeah.
And the accuracy is, once you've done that dish, write it all down and then maintain that standard. So I think it's all those sort of things together. But, you know, it does become emotional, because sooner or later, and people go, you're no longer a chef. Look, I still cook. My wife will argue that she cooks more than me at home. But I still think there's moments where you walk through a market or a restaurant and you smell something and you're like, what year was that? What date was it? Reminiscing with that nostalgia. And that's where I think all the time I talk is through passion. Sometimes it can be intimidating and overwhelming, but I love what I do. And I'd rather take someone who loves that passion, whether it's anything to do in hospitality, and get them there. And that's that success piece. So I think, you know, I can talk for hours, but it is just having a bit of self-belief what you do and just keep chasing it.
Then taking that world-class mentality and being involved in the World Cup chef team,
So the England culinary team was, as I was young, I did a lot of competitions. I spent time with Marco, I spent time with Sutcliffe back then, and different things. Then I got into the Salon Culinaire, and competitions isn't for everyone, but a friend of mine who moved to America was like, let's go give it a giggle. So I was on school holiday working in Bournemouth. So we did the Bournemouth Salon Culinaire, and I did a cook and serve, got gold. My mate did another class, he got gold. I thought, this is all right. This isn't what you do. We're taking the base prep and then cooking it in a short period of time on stage. So I did lots of competitions and enjoyed it, and enjoyed the rewards and enjoyed the lessons and meeting people. And then one of my friends, Adam Thomason, who's the culinary director at Restaurant Associates, he called me up just after COVID and goes, oh, Nick Vardis, the great Nick Vardis, is stepping down. It takes a mad sort of character to run this gig. Do you want to be sort of run the team and do the coaching part? And I was just like, well, how's it work? You know, I'm not really cooking at that level anymore. And he goes, we don't need to know about cooking. We're here because we can cook. Yeah. It's channeling all the energy.
Yeah.
And I think it's more about leadership. And that's where I was like, okay, let's give it a go. And the committee, which, you know, you got Peter Griffiths and Andreas Antonis, the heroes, you know, and they've done a lot of work. And I think, you know, there's new blood coming. Let's give it a go. And don't get me wrong, it's been hard to learn how these competitions work, because, you know, you've got a team, you raise your own money. You go over, we did the World Cup a couple of years ago, and we just finished the Olympics this year. The Culinary World Cup was in Luxembourg, and the Olympics this year was in Stuttgart. I'm still getting speeding tickets for that as well. There's cameras everywhere in Stuttgart online. But I think you take a team, and you practice, you get the money, you practice, and you go over, and it's a competition like no other. Adam Thomason is a fantastic cook. There's other people on the team. We got a chocolatier. We did a centerpiece made of chocolate, you know, and you don't get a lot of sleep, because you prepare, you practice, you prepare, you move things. And I think the first time I'd done it, I was like, this is amazing. The exhaustion that followed was different, I suppose, not mental or body. It was like, it's over. What do I do? So Adam said, do you want to be the coach? We went along with it. We did a lot of work. A lot of the team, great people, we all still connect with. We're in the military, so with all the problems going on over in East Europe, they all had to go. So we're in the shit, really. Sorry. And we had to find some people. And we went to Luxembourg with a rookie team, which is, you know, first year. There's two events. One's the hot kitchen for 3 courses for 110 people. You can prepare some items, you take all the ingredients yourself, and you get 5 hours to cook it, 3 hours to serve it in. So that was intense. And then you do the chef's table, which is a 7-course meal for 14 people with a chocolate centerpiece. So we did the chocolate centerpiece over here, we took it over, and you finish over there. But the emotion behind that, watching the team in the box, they call the kitchen the box, was brutal. But, you know, we got gold or silver. and we got third place in the world for our centerpiece. So yeah. I was like, this is good. Yeah. The world, you know, it's like NFL, the world. So I was like, right, well, you know, Adam and I reviewed on that, reflected, and we're like, yeah, we're just not, we haven't got enough time to practice.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, the other teams, hands off to what they do. Some people, it's, you know, they got £1 million budget.
Is that like a full-time job almost?
Yeah, full-time job. Wow. Norwegian team. So they came third. Great bunch of people. But then with the Olympics this year, we all had a challenging year last year through work. Yeah. And, you know, I suppose when you go on your own, your job sets the standard. So, and the previous job Adam was in was events. So he's all over the world. So basically we got the team together and put the menus together. And the cool thing is Ashley Palmer-Watts is a good friend. I said to him, look, 25 years of age, getting 3 Michelin star, working for Heston, top level. You know what you're on about? Would you help us around flavor? Mm-hmm. So the scoring on the events is 50% is about flavor. The other 50% is around preparation, ways of working. Very sterile environment. You're not allowed to have cloths down the side. You know, you've got judges on you all the time, the way you work. It really is meticulous, and you'd have to watch a video to understand it. But, you know, you can't have one piece of protein on your board for longer than a period of time and then put it on a tray that's cold before you do the next one and clean it down. It's about standard.
Yeah.
So Ashley came on and...
And it's almost like a open,
oh, it's open
plan,
yeah,
sort of thing.
It's like a football stadium. So, you know, Sweden, take a team, stand outside the door and scream for 5 hours. And they got bands and trumpets. So it's a bit wacky. And the Bocuse d'Or, which is an individual event, they do the same. They got the Barmy Army that goes on there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people in the kitchen is really hard. So having someone like Ash talk about flavor, it was optimizing all those points.
Yeah.
And Ash is a scientist and he's next level. You know, he talks to him about cooking a steak and, yeah, it's not what I would call cooking a steak.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
But he's remarkable. So he inspired the team and the team did really well. And I think the hard thing is we didn't practice enough. We put a lot into it. But I think, you know, we got 2 silvers and we got the highest scoring centerpiece, so we'd take number 1 on that. But I think it just goes to show that we got high-profile points on flavor, but it was working habits. Mm. And I think, you know, what I said earlier is, you know, when you work with someone, you become at one with that relationship, you understand the sixth sense or where they go. And, you know, having money and sponsorship brings that together. And, you know, with a new group of people, we had 3 new people in the team. Spending the, you know, not everyone can do weekends, and it's all our time.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing. So we're happy where we got, but we lost points. And I think you start with 100 points and you go down. And I think gold to silver is 95 to 94.
Yeah, which is still incredible.
You know, when they do the men's 100 meters, first to 8th, hundreds of a second, but no one ever thinks about 4th, do they? And it's all about marginal gains. So we've done it twice now. We're doing a review. I don't know what's next. The World Cup's in a few years, but it takes a lot of my personal time and, you know, I get the nod from Mrs. D. So I'd love to do it because I'd like to get in the top 3.
Yeah.
And it's because you're competing against a criteria rather than a team. You can win through the criteria. So, and you know, Adam and the team, amazing bunch of people. So yeah, that was great. And, you know, you sit there and, you know, done something for my country, which I'm very proud of.
I'm phenomenal. And I think one of the years I got to the Bocuse.
Bocuse d'Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
Leon?
Leon.
Was that right? Yeah. So I went one of the years and I think Brian Turner was around doing coaching or something like this. So I was out with Nestle, but it was pretty mad.
Yeah, it's you know, the stuff they do at Bocuse. I went over with Simon Rogan and the team when Tom Phillips was the coach and Ian Musgrave was the candidate. And it was magical.
Yeah.
But it's chaos. What they create in the time frame they've got, it's very clinical. Yeah. And John Williams was sitting with us and he goes, they're working too dirtily. And I'm sitting there going,
yeah.
It's those small marginal gains. And afterwards you just sit there going, you know, take my half to you, because it takes a focused kind of person to do something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tom Phillips is a great individual, Ian Musgrave, you know, all those great chefs who are coming through and inspiring the next generation. You know, they've been, most of them have been through the Ritz. The Ritz is, for me, is the number one place in London. So, you know, and all those standards come from people who believe in standards.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for me to put my little mark on the pub industry, I'm quite proud of it. But, you know, it all comes down to, and I remember John Williams, he came and did a presentation to the team. We asked him for 15 minutes. An hour later, he's still going. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
Phenomenal man. And his introduction goes, we all are chefs. We all just cook with different ingredients. So no matter what level you're at, he encompasses it. We all cook with different ingredients, cook with the most expensive.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's great. You know, we can't afford the truffles you use. And people are paying hundreds where, you know, in a gastro pub to a community pub, people are paying different. Yeah. But the way he delivered it was the same story about team, about belief, about being open. You know, and he's done a remarkable job there. So
that thought though, because it means that there's no snobbery.
No,
there's an inclusivity.
Yeah.
And it's like, no matter what level you're at, or, you know, if you're in the Dog and Duck, or, you know, it's a little, you know, sort of bistro place that's your own, or whatever it is, that's a fantastic, for someone like that to see it, because they could be a bit more exclusive and a bit more...
elitist.
Yeah, exactly, you know, but that's a lovely thing. But he looks like a lovely man.
He's got, I did a stage there once when I was at Restaurant Associates on a Thursday night. And I was just, you know, stars, you help always get out of the way. Yes. And I remember he's got big hands. Gosh. So I'm standing there on the path, the senior suit, and he's on the phone talking to someone. And all I heard was this quote it was, and I'll politely put it, if you're going to put food on a plate like that, then don't bother.
Oh.
And I sort of looked over, but the way he said it, and then you see his hand go up and he grabbed the plate and he goes, not tonight. So he had eyes everywhere.
But
he stood true to what he did. You know, he's a remarkable leader, remarkable. But even the time we had with him is like, you know, he tells his story, and it was just like, we're all the same people. We just took different journeys, and it was great. And the team at the time felt inspired by it, but connect with it. To your point, it's not I'm up here, you're down there.
Yeah,
you know, and all the ingredients we used, fantastic. And we sourced them from the New Forest or Laverstoke or wherever. But it was just like, we're all in this together. And that's what, you know, we took the team there for dinner one night. It was lunch, I think. And they're all blown away. John came out and said hi. And I was like, but it's starstruck. And you know, it's my dad's 70th today. We haven't told him yet. Well, I want to take him to the Ritz, because I just think if you want to take someone on a food journey that sums up life, it's the Ritz.
It seems to be the place. And, you know, I've always gotten my mind's eye, a documentary that was on about it years ago. I mean, I'm talking 20 years ago or something. And it was just the attention to detail of lining up the knives and forks, the sight lines, the straightness. And, you know, I say that to my clients, you know, for some kind of employee engagement, if you can talk to them, it's about going along and seeing how they do it.
Yeah.
There would be like nothing. And it would stay with someone for life, you know, that even if they didn't stay in hospitality, like when they were setting a table for dinner, or, you know, Christmas dinner, or birthday, or it just maybe an evening one, I bet they'd be thinking about it.
Well, saying that, I was at the Devonshire having one of my lunches before Christmas.
I haven't had lunch there yet.
I loved it. But is it Danny Myers who did the setting the table?
Danny.
He sat across behind us. And Ash was like, that's Danny. And I'm setting the table. I was just like, that's awesome. And I think, you know, I remember reading that book back in, I don't know when it was, 2012. And it is, you know, you get to set a standard when people come in. And that's what I love about hospitality. It's like, you know, people go treat your restaurant like your home, come in. But what I love now is, you know, fine dining has become a lot more soft rather than stiff, and pushing the Ritz aside because that is an icon. But it's all about the food and the service, and service is warranty. So whether you're a top gastro pub, you know, or a coffee shop or whatever, is all about standards. And even, you know, in the world of coffee, I thought I knew a lot about coffee until I did a tasting with Ash, and he just violated everything. But it is, again, you go back, and at the age of, I think it was 42 when we did the tasting, I just recalibrated. I had a very different view. And Ash goes, look, when you're young, your view and your palate's this. As you get older, it's that. And you're at this journey here where you just need to check in.
Yeah.
So, you know, we descale our machine every other week.
It counts. I mean, I remember I worked on the coffee project at Pret, and all that was, like, I never realized how important all that was. You know, the looking after the machines, the water that was coming in, the roast as well. You know, we sort of moved it to bring it more in line with more kind of high street coffee, because Pret's coffee had a reputation for being quite bitter. So people who loved coffee would go, that's a really decent coffee.
Yeah.
But not enough, it actually scared off the wider masses. So we had to just kind of recalibrate it slightly, you know. But yeah, once you get into Ankh coffee is one of my favourite. I think if I had to give anything up, like, I think coffee I would struggle with the most.
Yeah.
Not because of the caffeine, just because I absolutely adore it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good decaf out there.
Oh, well, the decaf in Artisan is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they do a half calf now. I think it's called Libra. It extends your coffee times. I'm drinking coffees at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But I found as I get older, I used to love double espressos when I was young, but as I got older, I'm just like, don't even go near it.
No. Well, funnily enough, I'm about to start working with a personal trainer, and Lady turned up and we're having a wee meeting to see what we're going to be doing and whatever. And yeah, he was like a real kind of, and you know, and it was like, you know, he walked rocks in and I was like, do you want a coffee? Double espresso, you know, and he was just slamming it down. I was just like, okay. And I'm going, can I have an oat milk? And, you know, all this.
A creative agency for the hospitality sector, Saved by Robots create compelling brands and memorable experiences through great design and engaging storytelling. From Scottish Restaurant of the Year Sugar Boat to Tipjar, the digital tipping platform that's taken over the world, Saved by Robots excel at bringing ideas to life. As well as developing new concepts and refreshing existing brands, the robots provide outsourced graphic design to help multi-site operators grow with confidence. Check out their work and get in touch at savedbyrobots.com.
Hi everyone, I'm Lucy, Head of Sales at Airship & Toggle. Hopefully you've heard of us before, but in case you're not sure what we do, let me bring you up to speed. Airship is a leading hospitality marketing CRM, supporting operators by building a better understanding of their customers' visiting habits to help them target, personalise and automate their marketing and deliver a return on investment. And Toggle, which is our gift card platform and generated a whopping £48 million for the sector in 2023 through the sale of prepaid gift cards, experiences, tickets, merchandise, and so much more. I'm here to tell you a little secret though. Airship CRM have a huge update coming, which is going to change hospitality marketing in 2024, making it faster and stronger than ever before. If you want to learn a little bit more before we launch, just get in touch with me on lucy@airship.co.uk, or you can visit our website to learn more about what we do for hospitality at airship.co.uk.
So there's a couple of things, I'm just conscious of time, so there's a couple of things I was going to ask. One was just around leadership, because I had the pleasure of going out with you guys a few times, and there's one particular night we were out, and we were outside, we were kind of open air bar, and I remember like Duncan being there and everyone, and there was a feeling that there was so much respect for you as a leader. I think a lot of people, I think there was respect, but I think you're so like full on in terms of you're like, this is how we were going, this is, and actually you had an absolute brigade that would have died for you and vice versa, which is rare now, right?
Yeah, it is.
So I always saw you a bit in this Sir Alex category, that kind of thing, you know, either you're with me, you're not, this is the flavour, this is the train, get on it or don't, I don't really care. So with that, I was just wondering, any tips of how to get that, because you know, and also you were great at succession planning and making people feel important.
You know. I think it goes back to, you know, the team we had at Fuller's, whether it's through Jonathan or, you know, Dawn Brown, phenomenal character and structure and training, and you know, we had some big characters, and I got a coach, top bloke, David Williams, and you know, he's like, you know, you have 16 conversations in your head at once, we need to get that down to one or two. So I didn't read a book until I was 31. So at school, I had a book, and it was Silence of the Lambs, Slim Plastic. So I started reading, but because of the way my head worked around being dyslexic and as I've had a dyspraxia, I started reading in chapters and trying to digest it, speed reading. But there's two books I was given, and one is, I'm a big rugby nut. My boys play rugby, and I used to love playing rugby because it was the only time I wasn't leading.
Yeah.
You know, and I connected with, you know, whoever the captain was. It was great. But the All Blacks, their book by Chris Kerr, is phenomenal, you know, and in there it talks about no matter who you are, look, it's all, everyone does it now. When they won the World Cup, they went back and cleaned the change room.
Yeah.
So as you work through the business, you see something on the floor, pick it up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if
that drives me insane, by the way. Well, I get taught that early, you know.
What used to drive me nuts is you're sitting there having a meal and they never take your empty cutlery or cups away. So I used to love doing that. So, but it's, and the other, the, you know, the All Blacks were very humble, you know, and so I got the whole team to read that. So whether you like rugby or not. And I had, you know, one of the guys in the team, Timmy May, great chap, a lot of energy, because don't like the All Blacks. Just read the book.
Yeah. You know, it's not about that.
No, it's not about that. But so that got the team to connect.
Ooh.
And then there's another one, which I've spoken to this guy, David Marquette, turning the ship around. Great.
Yeah.
The guy studied for 2 years to take over the best submarine in the American Navy.
Uh-huh.
And then in the last sort of couple of months of his time, they give him the San Fe, which was the worst submarine.
Uh-huh.
So rather than argue and kick off. And the book, he's done an 8-minute video which talks about leadership.
Right.
And it's a really cool thing. It's a little sort of caricature. And it talks about pushing authority down to the people.
Right.
And then a lot of the other books that followed was about whether it was Colin Powell, mm-hmm. your 4-star general, you know, and about having your values. And it was amazing. So I started taking that and giving it to the people. Mm-hmm. And Fuller sent me to business school. It was great. A lot of money for 2 weeks. And I'm sitting there going, I'm going to go meet some characters, 10 in a group. But they pre-scoped the group for that week. And I walked in, you know, trying to achieve 100 million in food sales and high quality supply chain, all this stuff. And I walk in and there's people with billion-pound accounts. I'm sitting there going, wow, I'd be intimidated. But we got to meet professors that talked about scenarios in business.
Yeah.
So after I walked out of that, I ripped everything up.
Mm-hmm.
But I went back to those two books, The All Blacks and David Marquet, and I said to my team, right, it's really simple. I want you guys to own the accountability and decision-making. Mm-hmm. Only come to me when it's something big, food safety, mm-hmm. you know, supply chain, pricing, you know. But I want you to be able to run your area and pass that autonomy down to chefs or kitchen porters and inspire people to then come back up. So those two books is what really ticked it for me. And I did loads of presentations on stage and it was about, you know, those two books. And even now where, you know, you see what the All Blacks have done.
Yeah.
You know, my wife's South African for my sins. It doesn't work for rugby.
Yeah.
But again, every other country's picking it up. And I think, you know, if you take that one thing and you can learn from it and it's worked really well. Yeah. And, you know, my biggest hero is Michael Jordan. I love that guy. I love the book. And it's like he goes, I was a nightmare to work with. I see myself not being Michael Jordan. But that's what I was.
You're too short.
Yeah, well, a little bit. but it was, I was, I created an environment to be managed because to manage so many people, you can never manage more than, I think, 6 or 7 people say. Mm-hmm. If you push authority to the people, mm-hmm. you have a framework that the business operates, what the standards are.
Yeah.
And all this took ages to build. You know, we involved ops managers. We got ops managers and the ops directors making tartar sauce.
Yeah.
Well, why? So you know what goes in that sauce.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So build a better relationship with food. And that's where I think, you know, from the leadership point of view is, you know, when you basically put yourself out of job and the future's coming through, you've done the right thing. And I'll never forget, there's a young lad, Clayton, he turned around at a senior event, said, I want your job. And I said, you can have it. I was like, well, you answered that so quick. And I said, well, he doesn't get up till 8:30. So, you know, and that was, it was really good because, you know, people talked about leadership and, you know, recently through work and a project, I can't control the blame. I don't quite like it. So I've sat in meetings going, it's my fault.
Yeah.
People go, why is it your fault? Let me own it. Let me own the issue.
Yeah.
Because then we stop the blame culture.
Yeah.
And then you work your way through it. And I think with every business, things change and that. So it's how you take people on that journey and humility, you know, people call me arrogant. I'm just confident. But I think the more you put your hands up, people listen.
Yeah.
And I think you see, whether it's on TV or some of the books I read, that people would never own the problem. They always have spin doctors around them. And I think, you know, through working in kitchens, if you own that problem, but then teach them how to fix it, you remove any sort of how people feel and actually it's a solution.
Yeah.
And I think that's where my pride was. I felt that people could approach me, you know, and, you know, it wasn't always perfect. Did I always get it right? No. Was I misunderstood? Probably, you know, but it's like my passion to make the team successful was my goal. And I said, when I played rugby, I used to go on that pitch knowing I could be a petulant child because I wasn't the boss. And even when they're like, do you want to be vice captain? I'm like, no, I want to be thrown into the ruck. I want to throw people in the air in the line out.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want no responsibility apart from I want the ball and let me support my team because it felt, you know, there was, you know, in all business, there's hard moments. And at the top, it's very lonely.
Ooh.
It was very lonely. And you small people you could talk to because, you know, you didn't want to show a weakness or ask questions. But, and that's where you just sit there and you look to a book. Well, you know, I used to look to Michael Jordan's the Last Dance, and look at it and go, I get it. So you'd seek answers rather than ask questions.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I you know, like you said, the team that were there and a lot of the team that evolved over the time, there's thousands of chefs. When I, you know, even you know, since leaving, people drop me, you know, what you're up to? Thanks for everything.
Yeah.
And that's the bit where I'm like, thanks for what? I struggle with that.
Yeah.
You know, I did
why accepting praise?
Yeah, yeah. I struggle with that a bit. You know, and that's the bit where I think when you look back and you're like, oh, I think I've done a good job. Yeah. But by now, it's like when you develop something, come Christmas, you'll never see it.
Yeah.
Well, or what's the expression for people who make whiskey? Create something you might never see.
Yep.
And I think that's the making sure that my shift and my team and the whole team do right for the customer. Yeah. Is that winning mindset, which comes at a price.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of sacrifice. And with the hours that you do and the focus and the energy and, you know, it is for everyone.
No, it's not. And I think maybe that's the competition piece, is trying to recalibrate that I can do it.
Yeah.
And you know, you walk away from it and you're just sitting there going, people are like, what do you get? I said, oh, well, the team got 2 silvers. And they're like, isn't that amazing? I'm like, silver though, isn't it? But it's still amazing, but it's, you're never happy. So, and that's where I think hospitality, you know, it's amazing. You know, being in a kitchen, being in front of house, connecting with customers, you know, you can feed someone and they smile. You can serve someone and they smile. You know, you look after someone, and it's those moments we created. And that's where I think, you know, even now, it's having children. One of the best stories I heard was my oldest son went on a trip, which it was a nightmare. I was like, he's going to be all right, you know, as a parent. And he's a competent, confident kid. And we went to parent-teaching evening, or it was online, should I say. And she goes, the most remarkable thing I've seen from your son. And I was going, right. where are we going here? And he goes, oh, when we flew to Barcelona. There's no lady who couldn't get off the plane. So he waited with her and took her bag and then helped her off. And I'm sitting there going, wow. Yeah, you know, it's the moment you can't see.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, you know, that to me, it still brings tears to my eyes. But in hospitality, it's about moments like that. Ooh. And that's why I love the industry, because, you know, when you do a great shift, it's a team effort.
Yeah.
When customers give feedback. Yeah. And I think that's where the world's got to, is if you invest in the right products, the right people and the right offer.
Yeah.
You live that experience.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, you know, to be happy was to be sit down one day and be in that environment continuously, mm-hmm. but I'd get bored.
Yeah, but bored easily. I think, you love having a few things going on. Just on that note then, what is next for you then? What is happening over the next few months?
So I'm working with some very cool people who I've worked with before. And I think with the world being in a different place with whether chefs or costs, you know, it is quite crazy. I think not a lot of people have seen inflation. You know, people are like, what's inflation? You know, so we're working with a group of people. We announced coming out in, I think we're going to launch in April. It's a business called Inspire, which is food for a bigger business. And this is about helping people in the industry. And, you know, we've got an experiential place in Bicester where people go through and, you know, whether it's prepared or delivered wholesale, prepared, cooked, or we'll put it together for you. It's creating an experience of food. And the one thing that people haven't connected with is seasonality. People talk about it.
Yeah.
But if, you know, with these rains recently, potatoes, is it, where are we now? Next month? Going to go through the roof. But it's not even this next month. It's next year.
Right.
So it's trying to understand that. And some of the, you know, a lot of the customers we're talking to, you know, don't buy peppers in end of April, beginning of May.
Right.
Why not? Well, if you don't, we can save you a lot of money over the rest of the year. So it's taking all our knowledge and putting it, whether we help make menus or support development, and it's working with people, you know, CPUs are getting shut down, you know, because there's cost. You can't. So we've created this really cool business, and, you know, I've been doing a couple of days a week on that, and, you know, we're going to go full for it. So it's getting closer to food, to know that no matter whether you're a small, you know, small business or a big business in this country, we're working with people in Germany, America, it's making sure we add value to the industry, knowing that using the seasons and sustainability and agriculture to pull it all together at the right time in the right place. And, it's taken me a while to, I think, digest it, but I think I love it. It's, you know, my ultimate goal would be to have a farm, and people think I'm nuts.
Funnily enough, we spoke about this so long ago, like 10 years ago, more maybe.
Yeah.
We were at outings.
Yeah.
And you said those exact words to me then.
Yeah.
That's what you were going to.
So we moved from, we lived in Staines. We moved to Berkshire. I live in a forest, and I think that's as close as my wife's going to let me get to a farm. She bought a dog. It's an animal, I suppose. But I just love to have a farm and hear the right things. Look, it's a really hard job. I love the countryside. Yeah. It's great for the mind. And I think, you know, take my hat off to anyone in farmer or fishmongering, aquaculture. And it's just pulling it all together. But, you know, I think retail's doing a great job talking to our people.
Yep.
But at the same time, I don't think we've nailed the seasons. still it does my head in when my daughter asks for strawberries in December.
Yeah.
You know, but I think there's so much to do, and I think inflation will is going to force us to do that. Mm-hmm. So especially, you know, potato gate.
Well, I didn't even think or know about that. No. So.
But it's like, when we were in Fuller's, it was like, I said to people, if it's stormy outside and some fish doesn't turn up,
yeah,
why do you want to go out in that water?
True.
People used to look at me like I'm bonkers. If it yeah. rains really bad in 6 weeks' time, cauliflowers don't grow.
Yeah.
You get a small cauliflower,
yeah.
what do you mean to do?
Yeah.
So, and it's just trying to educate those little bits to chefs or into the industry so yeah. people know. And that's the bit that's fun. But yeah, I think it is just, it's getting closer to food in the detail mm-hmm. to help those where I was some time ago mm-hmm. really enjoy the produce we have in this country. Because mm-hmm. there's still so much of this country I haven't seen.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the bit is really enjoy going around, finding artisanal products and making sure it's got integrity.
Yeah.
Which makes everything else easy then. You don't have to do a lot to it.
Yeah.
So that's the plan.
That's the main focus.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, well, a couple of final just fun questions then, just yeah. to wrap up, because I know you'll need to go. Your phone will be red hot. So mark out of 10 questions that we don't actually yeah. mark out of 10, but we'll just talk about favorite city to eat in.
Wow. Rimini in Italy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spent a lot of time there as a child. The pasta there is just massive. It's great, yeah. I haven't taken my kids yet, but I will be soon.
Nice. That's a great answer. Yeah. Favorite hotel?
Ritz.
Mm-hmm. Stayed there?
Yeah.
What and what happened? Like, what is it like? Because I've never been.
It's remarkable. The breakfast, it's just the whole experience. Mm-hmm. You can go to Dubai or the Middle East and stay in a five-star hotel.
So you're talking Ritz?
London.
Green Park, yeah.
Yeah. But I think you can go anywhere and you can go to Dubai and get a really good stay. That is just everything about it's pristine.
Off the charts.
And, you know, Sunday lunch I haven't had yet. But breakfast and the food, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
No matter who you are, they treat you all the same.
Yeah.
You have to wear a tie. A friend of mine...
You have to wear a tie?
Yeah. A friend of mine came, he didn't have a tie, so they gave him one. It was hilarious. It was Donald Duck.
That's like the blue wellies at the ice skating. Yeah.
So, but the Ritz for me is the most. I remember as a young boy walking around London, the age of I think 16, and I just stood outside and I just
still a jaw dropper,
like,
isn't it?
A UFO come down. Yeah, it's a lot of romance about it.
Yeah, I passed it yesterday in a taxi, and I still am like, wow. Yeah. I've had afternoon tea there.
Yeah.
But I've never done anything.
I took my grandmother there for afternoon tea, and I remember she bought the Ritz bag, and she used to go and collect her pension with the Ritz bag. And my grandson took me to the Ritz.
Well, she needs to watch her. She'd get mugged. Yeah, don't walk around with her Ritz. Yeah, don't walk around with her Ritz bag. And then, favorite coffee shop?
I don't go to a lot of coffee shops.
Yeah.
I think I buy artisan at home.
Okay.
Go to it.
Your kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite bar? And favourite pub, and what would you drink there?
So I've been going to the Devonshire a lot recently, and we go for a late lunch and drink lots of Guinness. I think Osh and the team there have done a remarkable job. I think after leaving Fuller's, I stayed away from pubs for a while, but
yeah.
I'll be going there later on this afternoon. So nice. Devonshire.
Yeah.
Great people as well.
I think I did about three. Yeah, there were three pints yesterday.
And it's magical. They do 70 barrels of Guinness a week. It's mad.
Well, it was five deep outside at 3:30 p.m. on a Wednesday. And it was full inside, obviously.
Yeah.
So you're just going...
But it's great. The whole team do a remarkable job. It's that's hospitality.
Yeah. Oh, no, we fell a well I was talking to that was behind the bar.
Yeah.
Great wee lad. And he was giving me some good chat while he was waiting, you know, for the pint to settle.
Try
you know?
The cheese toasty.
I can't get near the food.
But they do it in the bar.
Oh, can you get it in the bar? Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. But then I wasn't even in the bar, I was outside. Am I allowed to take a cheese toastie outside?
I don't know. I've never taken it.
Get me in a bag?
It's
I don't
too
know.
Cold in December.
Oh, it was flipping. Yeah, it was absolutely. And then, favourite bar?
There's a great gin bar by us where I live down over in Crowthorne called The Hive.
Okay.
It's great, not far from the station.
Yeah,
it's great. You know, they do craft ales and all. My craft ales, I've done craft beer. So yeah, but they do banging gins, local gins. So yeah, it's great. And I love getting into London, but I love the countryside. In the countryside, but
a little bit.
Yeah.
And then favourite restaurant, and what would you eat there?
Wow, big question. I think Claire Smith's cool.
Ooh.
I've gone quite a few times. I never ate when she was at Hospital Road there, but I... When I was young, I went to Oswald Road And what I loved about it was everything was remarkable. The people, the food, the whole offer. And it's hard because I've eaten a lot. Pierre Kaufman, when he's at Tonclair, was my first ever meal. Ooh. But I think the way you see people evolve, and what I love about Claire's business is what she conveys and the value she talks on social media and her book, you live and breathe it when you go to the restaurant.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, from the leadership journey and the coaching I've had, to connect with that, you feel equal.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and yeah, I've met Claire a few times. Hello, hi. I'm like, shit myself.
Yeah.
Hi, you know. It's
pretty formidable, you know.
Phenomenal. Mm. But I think, you know, especially, you know, I know she talked a lot about being a female in the industry, her position and working with Gordon, you know, Gordon's got a phenomenal brand, but she really, and the team, when you're at the chef's table, which we went with some friends, got a big glass. And those standards are impeccable.
Yeah.
And it is remarkable. That is like the creme de la creme. And I think I've had three different menus there, and I can never choose because it's always remarkable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, yeah, I'm lucky enough to go there, and yeah, that would be my number one. Yeah.
Nice. Right. Well, I think we're on time to get you back to the real world. But listen, it was so good to see you, and thanks for taking the time as well. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's been great to catch up, and I think a lot of people will be, you know, interested and inspired because of the episode. So thank you.
No, brilliant. Thank you. No, it's been great seeing you, and thanks for the invite.
Yeah, I'll see you in Brighton soon.
Yes, definitely.
So there we go. Amazing episode with Paul. Great to catch up with him. As I say, just an old friend. So it makes doing podcasting really, really simple. Also, I really wish him and the team well into the next chapter and what it is they're going to be doing next. It's going to be really amazing to see what they do. And damn it, we forgot to get a picture. So sorry about that, Paul. We'll do it again sometime soon. But anyway, go well, and I hope everything works out in this new adventure.
This podcast is sponsored by Vita Mojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV, reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. Just visit vitamojo.com/supersonic and get in touch with the team right away. That's vitamojo.com/supersonic. So this is me, Mark McSee, signing off for another podcast, and I'm really looking forward to the next time we're together. Next time, we'll hear from many, many more interesting people with top tips, tricks, and tales that will make your brand boom.